You guys work for The Guardian.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Super cool. Can you talk to me about the history of this assignment? When did you first know that you were coming here, and what was your reaction to that?
I better field that one because I've been on it since the beginning. So the idea was actually pitched by James, who's just a part of it, which isn't very, very helpful. But essentially, we were keen to learn about conspiracy theories, but also this kind of wider idea of denialism and the kind of the state of the world at the moment that's led us to these sort of fringe theories growing, which we understand they do. And so it was kind of pitched to me. People have mentioned to me previously that the Flat Earth movement would be something that was worth looking into, and I couldn't quite get a handle on what our angle would be that would make it interesting. And I didn't feel comfortable just coming and poking people with a stick and sort of trying to make people look weird and that sort of thing, which is not kind of my bag anyway, but is the natural thing I think that people look at when they sort of mention Flat Earth movement. You know, people naturally go, oh, how do you not laugh at them, or whatever else. So, and that's not, doesn't interest me. So when it was sort of suggested, this sort of wider thing about kind of what's going on psychologically and whether societally we're doing something wrong or that sort of thing, I just thought there was something interesting there. And Denver, we were working towards Denver just because it was a big convention. There was one in July, but that didn't work for us time-wise, did I almost, I think. So, but then budgets at The Guardian being as they are, it wasn't confirmed until very recently that we were actually going to come here. We were hoping to get out here. We'd done some stuff in the UK with the Flat Earth Movement in the UK. Mm. We were very keen to take it international because the US is probably a much bigger kind of Flat Earth place in many ways, I'm sure.
I wonder why that is.
I think there is more people here, which is a good start. But America is kind of, it's the home of a lot of big things and interesting things and out there theories and so on and so forth. And I you might know better than me what you think the kind of reasons for in the American psyche for a kind of, because there's room for everything in America, right? There's people from all over the spectrum.
It's a petri dish of interesting sociological
phenomena. Yeah, I mean, it's just, this is it, right? And and I don't think there's anywhere quite like this on the planet other than America. It's just the place to be for interesting things. And also, American people are really good at talking as well, as a kind of blanket statement.
Mm-hmm.
You get a lot of people are very candid, people are very open, people are very honest.
Mm-hmm.
And so in Britain, I think people are a lot more guarded and a lot less likely to be interested in being part of what you're trying to do. Whereas in America, people do take you at face value a bit more and just like, okay, I'll tell you how I think.
Right.
You know? Mm.
And I think, you know, America is all about kind of grand narratives. America itself is a grand narrative. It has, you know, the story of America is such a powerful, amazing story that I think that permeates into the way people think about conspiracy theories, is that things that might seem mundane or just quite random or just tragic or sad, they are, these conspiracy theories infuse them with a kind of grander narrative, which makes people feel maybe they have some control over it, or feel at the center of it in some way, or feel that they know more than the mainstream. And I think that attracts people too, is that sense that you're part of a small group that knows more than other people, the other people, right, the norms. And I think that's the big thing here, is that people feel not only part of a group, which makes people feel a sense of belonging, but also, you know, maybe a sense of like superiority slightly, that they know more than the scientists who claim to have all these degrees and all these qualifications, and in fact the little guy maybe knows more.
Right.
And that's, I think, part of the attraction of it.
I'd say one other thing actually that is perhaps a lot bigger in America than it is in the UK is religion. And I think you get people a lot more sort of quiet about their religion in the UK. It's a lot more kind of sort of in the background, and in America it's very much in the foreground, and it very much forms people's identity in a way that it doesn't quite in the UK as much, I would say, these days.
Mm. Well, certainly religion is a topic that comes up, perhaps unsurprisingly, a lot in this Flat Earth Convention. Yeah. Can you speak to that? What has been your impression? Are you surprised in any ways, or has the involvement of religion, and of course specifically sort of fundamentalist, literalist Christianity, has that involvement been what you expected, or has it been surprising in any ways?
I thought there would be some overlap. Obviously, there's that sense of humans being at the center of the universe that overlaps with the flat earth idea, I guess. It's a resistance against this idea that we're floating massive particles or atoms just randomly floating around the universe and we're no different from any other mass that's out there. So that sense that the earth is special and that humans are special and were created is, there was some overlap with religion, of course. Although I think most religious people have no sense that the earth is flat. That's not like, it doesn't go that way. It just goes that some people who are here are religious.
Right.
There doesn't seem that many religious people in America think the earth is flat.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems to me that typically the story in America when it comes to people who become atheists is that they're told and they're sort of grown in this environment that is religious, and they reach a certain age where they're given the scientific narrative. The scientific narrative is not compatible with the religious narrative. They leave the religion. The way that I make sense of the overlap between religion and flat earth as we're discussing it now is that it seems to me that once you start to say that there is quote-unquote empirical evidence, scientific evidence that the earth is flat, and you get into, the idea that there is a NASA cover-up and there are these little things, if you watch the video close enough, you see something. If you do an experiment with lasers, you can see something. Then it's almost like it gives religious belief a kind of a empirical basis that was otherwise taken away from us when we learned about Darwin, right? So that's what I was thinking of, is because a lot of people here seem to have stories where they started as atheists and then became religious, and Flat Earth was a part of that. So it seems to me that maybe what's going on is Flat Earth is operating as a way to provide like empirical pillars for religious belief. Almost like the end is religious belief. Their hearts want to believe that, as you said, we are important. We are not just dust that just assembled into, an ape that knows that it's going to die. And the idea that there is this overarching conspiracy and the idea that there are these small empirical findings that you can do yourself to prove kind of ground that otherwise belief that you just need to have faith to have. So it seems to me that that might be some way that those two ideas are working together.
Because the world is chaotic and unfriendly, and to believe in a flat earth means you have some agency yourself. And I think agency is very important, and it allows you to cling on to other things that you think, right, well, if the earth is flat, then I can have this, 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 and this, and I'm feeling more in control and more empowered. Very difficult to, I've not had many people who will explicitly say that, but people infer it in different ways, but I think to explicitly say that is perhaps to negate your argument that the earth is flat. So I think people are, whether or not they believe it themselves, whether or not they're kind of hiding it from themselves, let alone us, but there is a reluctance to kind of go into that area for fear of sort of denigrating your entire argument.
Right, yeah. It seems like what they insist on, and this actually touches on something I mentioned earlier, which is that it's rather paradoxical that in some ways they're the ones that are sort of obsessed with what is objectively true. Mm. Not so much, let's say, the scientists on the other side of this who are saying, they are sort of turning a blind eye to the objective truth, because it seems to me that they could be of the position that, I believe the earth is flat because the Bible said so, period. And yet we've seen, literally hours of material and talks and lectures about, no, if you look close enough, there is empirical evidence. If you look close enough, our position is grounded in some kind of objective truth. And it seems to me that it's not entirely intuitive that they need to do that or that they should do that. And yet they insist on it. They insist on saying that their position is something that you can arrive at if you just follow the facts. If you go down the rabbit hole and you have a clear mind, you can go down into it. One thing I wanted to ask, because you mentioned, or at least alluded to it, the whole what they reveal to us. Now you guys have, I see in front of you, the media, press pass. Can you speak about what the reaction has been when people see that, at least initially?
Well, I mean, I think there is a atmosphere in America, just in general, of distrusting the media. And fake, this whole fake news thing that Trump has, like, riled up is definitely present, and I've experienced that. And I think also to them, we're obviously seen as outsiders. They probably have a perception of the media as looking down upon them, and they've probably seen different shows and different TV clips where people have made fun of these people. So when we come along, I think they have that perception of us. But that's really, we're trying to like not do that. We're really trying to understand this from a more psychological level of kind of why people are drawn to this. Mm-hmm. We're not interested in debating whether the earth is flat or proving or disproving or getting into arguments about that. Rich like hasn't gone down that road. We're much more interested in why people are drawn to this. And I think when we get into those kind of conversations, people are much more open to us. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's fun or interesting, or they really want to argue about whether the earth is flat or not. And I think that makes, I think talking about their story has made people more open to us. Mm-hmm. And I think us being English has helped, actually, often, you know, they're interested in us too, because we're from England and we come from a different culture, so they're somehow more open to us as well.
People have been very friendly generally, but I think they've also been slightly wary and suspicious. And we've had a lot of comments of people saying, are you going to paint us as crazies? Because that's what they're used to. And I think, you know, that's never been the intention. I mean, at the same time, you know, they have far better arguments than I have. I don't know how satellites work. I'm not a scientist. And so to actually argue with people who have done their research and albeit perhaps come to the wrong conclusions, they are far better at having these arguments because they have these arguments every day with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I can't prove that the Earth isn't flat. I don't have, you know, the ability to do that. So I think it's really important to not come from a point of view where you are sort of laughing at them saying you're idiots, because, you know, they know more about the globe Earth than I do. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of interesting because I've not done the research on it. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned tragedy, and that's something that earlier when we met today, you said something about response to tragedy. What do you think the tragedy is in terms of what they're responding to psychologically?
Well, I think, you know, what we were talking about before is that, like, there's a kind of spiritual tragedy in America or the West, a loss of, you know, decline in religion, a decline in a moral guideline that people can live by. And so lots of different groups and people are looking for a sense of identity, a sense of belonging, a sense of what's right and what's wrong. I think religion had a big part to play in that for centuries and thousands of years in many different ways. And so replacing that is the tough task for people today. And I think this is just one example of a response to that. And I think there's a kind of emotional, I think when people go from, you know, maybe you're born into a religious family and you lose your faith and you're trying to reclaim religion, or you're born into a non-religious family and you're trying to reclaim religion, there's an emotional, like, problem for people. Mm-hmm. And so, whether it's, so in this context, I think people are looking for a solution to that problem, and also a sense of belonging and being part of something is so important to all humans. And I think this is such a massive thing. So I think it is a response to kind of a social tragedy and a moral tragedy, a loss of, like, a mission, in a sense. And this is a big mission, is to solve this flat earth thing, you know.
And I guess as well, I mean, if you broaden out to conspiracy theories in general, I would say that you're looking at quite a large percentage of the population believe in a conspiracy theory, or at least tempted by one. And in to make sweeping psychological statements about a huge chunk of the population is impossible. People are going to come at it from many ways. I think one of the cliches is that people who believe in conspiracy theories must have some form of mental health issues. I don't think that's the case. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of people who are actually very intelligent, very sort of stable people, but still, obviously, they are looking for something. They but there's not kind of one size fits all for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
People are coming at it from a different place, but they're arriving at this because there is something missing and something that they're looking for and something that even if they don't realise it, I don't think you'd find this without looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like everyone is looking for something, right? I mean, everyone is looking for some...
Me for my car keys, usually.
Right, that's the... But everyone is looking for something, and yeah, this, you know, this particular culture that we're in, this flat earth thing, is quite an extreme part of that. But I think everyone is looking for some meaning, because that's just the way we're made, and we come across it in different ways.
And the combination of breakdown in trust in authority, sort of fake news, post-truth, all these sort of things that we're in at the moment, coupled with the rise in the internet and social media, means there is doubt where there wasn't previously doubt, potentially, but also the ability to look for other narratives rather than looking through the traditional kind of ways that you would get information before the internet age. You know, you get information from the newspapers and from TV, and there would still be conspiracy theories, but they wouldn't have the outlet that meant they could grow in the same way.
Mm-hmm. I think you hit the nail on the head when you said something about just now distrust of authority, because the way I think of it is, I absolutely agree with you that there is some kind of like a spiritual crisis that has been brought on specifically by scientific rationalism, and I believe that what's going on is that from a purely subjective perspective, you know, how you experience the world and your life, it's so clear that we're at the center of the universe. I mean, first of all, if we're talking about physics, literally you can treat any point in the universe as being the center. And a way I like to illustrate this is, where did the Big Bang happen? Not in some corner of the Andromeda galaxy, it happened right here, because it's the manifold of space-time that was expanding. So if you want to think of it that way, you can think of any place in the universe as being the center. But also in a more practical sense, I mean, we look around, the horizon is stretched around us, there are clouds above us, the earth brings fruit and things that are made for us. There is something about our lived experience that puts us at the center, right? And yet, and here's where the authority comes in, you have these scientists who say, hold on, if we want to talk about objective reality, if we want to talk about the universe as it is, then we cannot really put ourselves in the middle of anything. I mean, we are essentially just a mid-sized solar system, you know, in this star, you know, in this galaxy, and it's expanding, and, you know, and so it's almost as though scientism brings about this narrative that is completely contrary to our lived experience. And I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself, I may have said this before, but to me, flat Earth seems to be like, you know what, no, I'm going to insist on my lived experience. I'm going to insist that the Earth is flat because I see it as flat. I experience it. You hear a lot in there about, you know, I only trust my five senses. Mm. So to me, this kind of backlash against the, you know, scientific authority and established facts is almost as though, you know, they're lashing out against the people who are telling them that, no, actually, you are this kind of insignificant thing when it comes to the, you know, objective reality of things, the objective reality of the universe. You're actually not that special, despite the fact that from a purely subjective standpoint, all of us are special. But, you know, that leads me to something you said earlier, which is this, you know, this idea that we live in a post-truth society. I think that's the way. Can you elaborate on that and how you feel like that relates to the flat Earth?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of, as you're saying, like, there's the way people feel doesn't necessarily chime with the truth of things. And I think when people feel the Earth is flat, it makes them feel good. They see the Earth as flat. That becomes their truth, and it feels like truth is becoming a kind of individualized thing.
Mm-hmm.
That everyone has their own truth, and can live their lives according to that truth. And I don't know. To me, that goes against kind of some enlightenment like principles that is some of the foundations of the civilization we're in, whether it be medicine, which is, you know, if a doctor was to decide based on how he feels how he should treat someone, we're going to have a lot of problems. And so, you know, the way that we look at the world, I think, should be based on evidence and not our emotions or the way we feel about things, but rather experiments and scientific methods, I guess. Mm-hmm. However, I understand that leaves like a massive grey zone that leaves out human experience and human sense of self. And I think, so I think there's a grey area there for sure, but I think when it comes to physics and medicine and those kind of things, I think we need to be quite, personally, I think we need to be quite firm about saying, well, you can feel this way, but actually truth is something that needs to be investigated and proven.
A lot of that's around clarity, because we live in a very complex world and it's only getting more complex because there's so much stuff in the world, so much of this grey area, so much muddy water around, and without someone who can pick their way through this clarity clearly and provide the information in a way that people can digest and understand. And I think that there has been a breakdown in the ability of the scientific community, perhaps of the mass media, in doing this for the average person, then the water becomes very muddy.
Mm.
And when you've then got the president of the leader of the free world, sort of saying whatever he wants, and it not necessarily containing one iota of truth, but people are still accepting that because it fits their narrative, it fits their biases and so on.
Lived experience.
Their lived experience, right. Whatever else, then everything is up for grabs.
Mm-hmm. Right, and that overlaps to things like climate change, for instance. Like,
an inconvenient
truth. You know, climate change is something that many people might not experience, they might not see it, they might not feel it, they might not want it to be true. But 99% of scientists who have a lot more experience than we do have shown it to be true.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a massive movement of people denying climate change because it doesn't align with the way they feel or the way they want things to be.
And because you feel helpless.
And you feel helpless, and of course it makes people panic and not feel good, but it still doesn't stop it being true. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm talking about with the kind of post-truth thing, is things like climate change becomes like a debatable issue that something never gets done about because people don't want it to be true.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where it can become dangerous.
Mm-hmm. I want to explore this idea that you mentioned of the gray zone, the gray area here, because, and correct me if I'm wrong, what you seem to be saying is that there is this sort of objective reality, but it doesn't really leave a lot of space for your own sort of lived experience and human experience and subjectivity in general. I want to rephrase that in a way that I think will make this clearer. I think what we've been articulating is the idea that there is a truth that is in the domain of science and empiricism. And when it comes to that domain, we need to say that the way that we act in the world and the decisions that we make, as you said, in medicine, in physics, geology, and so on, needs to be based on empirical evidence as opposed to lived experience. Here's where I think we get into some territory, and maybe we can go back to this idea of the flat earth. I think there are truths outside of the objective truth. Because I think that when it comes to meaning and living a meaningful life, I see meaning as a kind of truth. And yet it is a truth that is not related to the idea of objective truth. And when I think of the scientific materialist era that we live in, I think it's categorized by a certain perspective that says, no, the truth is actually just objective reality. There's no truth outside of what exists and what we can show and demonstrate empirically. So it seems to me that we have to find a way to articulate some idea of truth that is, on one hand, outside of objective reality, because that just puts you in a place where you're just a random monkey on a random ball in the universe, but not fall into the trap of living in a post-truth society where everyone's just willy-nilly sort of believing what they want to believe. And that, I think, without dramatizing it too much, I think that is, if I want to capture maybe the spirit of our times, that's where we are.
Mm.
We're in a time where our technology and our scientific sort of abilities are at an all-time high, and this has maybe confused us into thinking that objective truth is the only truth there is, and when an individual feels that way, they miss out on this other flavor of truth that provides their life with meaning. These people, I think, have done it by subscribing to the flat earth, by believing that the earth is flat and at the center of the universe, that gives their life meaning. Again, I think they're actually falling into the trap, because then what do? They say, well, this truth is actually objective truth.
Mm.
You know, maybe now it's maybe clearer why I said that it's paradoxical, because on one hand, they're carving out a truth that is outside of objective truth because it's the truth of living a meaningful life. But on the other hand, they say, well, it's also objectively true. Mm. So it's not clear that they're actually moving away from the scientific materialist perspective. Mm. But I think that is really the task of our time is to, despite the fact that we are so scientifically inclined and we know so much about the universe, still carve out some last idea or flavor of truth that is related to meaning and subjectivity as opposed to just objective reality.
Mm. But I'd still say, you know, it's the responsibility of authority or institutions to actually do a better job of doing that. And the breakdown in trust that has happened is something that needs to be addressed from that point. Otherwise, I don't think we can ever really... The only thing we've got other than that is empathy, and to empathise with people and try to understand and listen. I don't know how else you kind of right that wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I think you put it very well, though. I think you put it very well. Very well. There's always there's so many things we don't know, right? There's so many mysteries about the universe and all those things that we think about.
And the gaps in knowledge.
The gaps in knowledge are so big, and so we need to find a way to fill those gaps with something meaningful. It isn't just about science, materialism, because that can't fill those gaps.
Mm.
So I think, you know, spirituality, religion, whatever you want to call it, has a big part to play. And I think it's a mistake just to like kind of look down upon those things because they're not exactly relied on scientific materialism.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to find a way to mix both those things.
Yeah, because it doesn't tell the whole story in its own.
Right. Well, if we agree on that, then I guess we're allies in that pursuit.
Yeah, sounds great.
And I hope that the future will be kind to us and that we'll continue to understand and, as you said, empathize with others.
I think it's important. I think it's very important.
Yeah.
It's not always easy, but it's important.
Yeah. So thank you so much. This is Fareed Alsaba, two writers of The Gardening. I don't know if you want to tell
Tom Silverstone.
Rich Springer.
Yeah, and thank you for joining us.
Cheers.
Take care.